accession number 27091, Mr. Ken Bean, Reel 4. Now, you're talking about Chatham still.
Well, they had tunnels under Chatham Barracks, which were the place, what was the place really, or were the places you were supposed to sleep at night, and they were rather unhygienic, and people tended to try and avoid them. I was fortunate in the short time I was working in Chatham Dockyard, I was billeted again ashore, but this time not in civilian digs, but in, I think it was one of these naval hostels, and I stayed there for a time. As I say, I remember very little about what I did in Chatham, what I was supposed to be doing. I did meet one or two people there that I still remember. But at the end of that time, I was again given a draft, which meant going back to barracks. You always went via the barracks, which I should explain that in the Navy of my time, and I don't know about now, I think there's only one central barracks, but there were three main divisions. There was Portsmouth, Devonport, which was known as Guz, don't ask me why, I never knew, and Chatham. I was a Portsmouth rating. So at the end of a draft, if a ship was paid off, you went back to your home barracks. I went to Portsmouth Barracks. And I wasn't there very long. The next draft I got was to what was a combined operations unit, which went under the name of Party Funshaw. Unusual name, you might think, for a combined operations unit. And this was based, once again, at HMS Collingwood, the land-based shore establishment that I joined up, where I joined up. So by 1944, and this would have been certainly coming up to D-Day of 1944, I was in a combined operations unit called Party Funshaw.
Now, the dates are obviously wrong. What we're going to do is look at your parchment in between the interviews and then insert the dates.
Yes,
so get
okay.
that down for
okay.
the next time. Because it looks to me like, because you were at Rutherford College, you said, up to June 44. So we'll put those dates right, but ignoring the dates for the moment. What was Party Funshaw? I don't understand the name. It's a combined operations unit. What was this unit?
Well, I think a comedian must have probably given the title to it, but it consisted of mobile wireless telegraphy units. When I say mobile, they were vans which contained large vans which contained WT gear. And the object of these vans was eventually to take part in the Normandy landings and provide communications. But, you know, I have to say, and this is a sort of general reflection, that in those times, generally, of wartime years, and this applies to my later service, very little explanation was often offered to people as to actually what they were doing or why they were doing it. We knew we were going to maintain these units and to use the equipment, but as to what role they would actually play in the invasion, I don't recall ever having been discussed. It was a time, you asked earlier on about weapon training. At this period, we were issued, but not allowed to keep, 45 Colt revolvers, and we had pistol training.
Tell us about that.
Can't remember very much about it. It was firing a few shots at a target and getting used to the sort of kick of the revolver. But not a lot of time was really spent on this. A little more time was spent on 303 rifles, which again we were issued with but didn't keep. And this was on a conventional firing range at Collingwood. I do remember the people I was with. I've still got photographs of a few people who were on this combined operations unit. It did occur, certainly it occurred, we were in that unit around the time of D-Day, And the vans, the units we were attached to, were in fields around Collingwood, and we spent days, and I don't know how many days, just doing nothing, really, keeping station with the equipment. I didn't say, but I should say also, not only had I not been to sea in this time, my time so far in the Navy, but I'd now managed to get out of naval blue and into khaki, which I didn't really like very much, because I enjoyed the Navy.
Tell me why. I mean, what's...
Well, I joined the Navy, really, to go to sea and to be in the Navy. And wearing naval uniform was part and parcel of it. Although we wore a naval hat, we wore khaki. And nothing happened, in fact, to our unit, whether it was because the invasion proceeded more successfully than had been anticipated. Party Funshaw, certainly as far as I was concerned, took no part in the invasion of Europe. And four of us, the other three lads who were on this particular van, I suppose it was, got fed up, and we put in a request, which you could do through commander's request, to go back to general service. That request was heard and granted. So, within a very short time, the four of us went back to Portsmouth Barracks, and that was the time I received my draft to a ship.
Now, what was this ship?
Well, the ship was HMS Tyne, which was a destroyer depot ship. It was a warship, obviously. It carried armament, but its role was as a depot ship.
And what did she look like? What was the nature? People don't know what that type of ship
is. Show you a picture of it. I can show you a picture, but I won't now, and I'll show you later on. Tyne had been built, laid down, I believe, as a cruiser. She was a ship of about 10,000 tons. She carried the armament of a destroyer. I suppose there were 4.7-inch guns fore and aft. It wasn't a handsome ship to look at. Had two funnels, which were not, I don't think, evenly placed, centred around the ship. They were more to the stern than perhaps would have been symmetrical. But having said that, I mean, she was she was fitted out to do principally the job intended. She was one of two ships of the class. The other one was Hecla, which was torpedoed off Casablanca in 1942, but Tyne happily survived the war.
And you were going aboard her as a leading wireless mechanic?
I was going, I joined her as leading radar stroke. Well, they had a particular way of identifying what you were supposed to have specialised in. I was known as a radio mechanic WR, which meant I'd done both wireless and radar. So I went on board as a leading radio mechanic.
And what was your first impression? Where did you join her?
Joined the ship in Glasgow in November of 1944, so that does give you an idea of the time perhaps I'd spent in the combined operations unit. There was no time delay between my coming out of the Party Funshaw, just a very short time. I probably got leave again, short time in barracks, and then straight up. So I would have quitted Party Funshaw, I suppose, sometime in October, I think, of that year. I joined Tyne in Glasgow in November, and I well remember that I had to travel to Glasgow, obviously, with the usual rail warrant, and joined the ship at night when it was pouring with rain, a very wet Glasgow night, and my first impressions, I suppose, were a bit of confusion, really. You have to remember that In those days, we travelled carrying kit bag and hammock. That was the standard equipment of the sailor. His kit bag contained all his gear and his personal effects, and the hammock was what he slept in. And I was allocated to what was known an artisan's mess, which I seem to recall was pretty crowded, and I had to sling a hammock for the first night. And that was my sort of introduction to joining the ship. So it was one of a bit of damp confusion.
Now, well, what was your mess deck like? What was it? Yeah, and your hammock, in fact.
Crowded, fairly crowded. I think the ship at that time was carrying, we carried marines as well, and there were more than the normal ship's company on board. I don't remember precisely how many of us there would have been in that mess, which was a space, well, perhaps the size of this room for probably...
So about 12 by 20.
Yes, about that. Might have been a little bit wider. But that was the approximate size. And, of course, there were bars across the deckhead to sling the hammocks from. And I suppose there were about 20 of us on the ship at the time. Yes, I didn't mean on the ship. I mean, the mess would have... I think there would have probably been about... Thinking about it, probably 30 men in that mess, something like that, between 25 and 30.
Now, how did you take the hammock? Had you had the hammock before?
Yes, I had slept in a hammock in the barracks. I'd slept in a hammock in Pompey Barracks before. Not the most comfortable thing to sleep in, I didn't think. Some people thought it was, but... the trick was really in trying to sling it as straight as possible and not have too big a loop in it. But I can't say I ever really enjoyed sleeping in a hammock. Later on, I managed to avoid it.
Well, did you have problems getting into it? That's the old joke of falling out.
There was a trick to get into. I don't suppose for one moment I could do it now. But you were able to grasp the metal, the steel rail that ran athwartships, I suppose is the expression, and you simply levered yourself up off that, so you got your legs over the hammock and then got the rest of yourself in. Wasn't all that difficult with a bit of practice.
And what about stowing and unstowing? Was that all a palaver?
I think we all had locker space, so I can recall. There was locker space under the... There was a seating arrangement around the sides of the mess. And there was locker space there, but there wasn't really, bearing in mind the number of men, there wasn't all that much room, so you had to be pretty tidy. And that's one aspect of the Navy, that they are tidy and they're clean.
What about stowing the hammock, though? I mean, where was it? Was that...
Can't remember.
Well, that's to the point you made. Was personal cleanliness seen as very important in the Navy? I mean, I believe it is, but I mean, can you talk a bit about that?
It certainly was. Just from my own experience, it never arose that anyone was not thought to be clean, but certainly the mess was kept clean. There were people responsible for cleaning it. Tables were always cleaned down after use, and past personal hygiene, a ship of this size carried showers in the heads, as they're known, on board ship, and I think anybody hadn't been particularly clean, they would have become aware of it fairly soon. The shipboard routine always includes commander's rounds, I think it were on the ship. The captain was a bit above doing the rounds, but every day, sometime during the day, I think this was in the late forenoon, commander did his rounds when obviously inspection was carried out of all the spaces. I think bearing in mind the mess I was in, which was, I said, was an artisan mess. This was really a mess for petty officers and leading hands, as they were known. So we were slightly protected a little bit from maybe the inspections that took place on the general mess decks. You know, because the seamen's mess was an open space, as were the stoker's mess. They were not enclosed, whereas the artisan's mess, which included petty officers and leading hands, was an enclosed space. So, but cleanliness was, I think, taken as read.
Now, what about your duties? Where was the... Was it the wireless officer, the radar officer?
I had an action station, which...
what was that?
That was the WT office in the bowels of the ship. Not a good place to be if you suffered from claustrophobia, because during there were action stations, the hatch was lowered, but that was not often. I wouldn't want to exaggerate that at all. There were not many occasions when we had to. I had to go there.
What was down there? What was in the wireless office? What equipment?
Wireless equipment, basically transmitter, transmitters and receivers. It wasn't the main wireless office. It was the relief wireless office, in a sense. The wireless office would be on the top deck, top part of the ship, top sides. The WT office down below was the emergency one, you might say.
And what was your duty there?
Well, my duty, I was first of all in the Navy known, on the lower deck, you are either a watchkeeper or you're a dayman. A watchkeeper is someone who works watches, normally 4 hours on and 8 hours off. I was a dayman, which meant that I worked a daily routine, and I worked in the ship's WT and radar workshop.
Now, so that's your cruising station, if you like.
That was, yes, that was everyday working station, right.
Now, so where was this?
It was in the after part of the ship, again, fairly several decks down. I can't remember how many decks, probably below the waterline, but it was certainly I do remember where that was precisely. And again, you're going to ask me what I did there. I can't for the life of me remember. We obviously had to repair any sets were defective, and the ship's own equipment was if it was defective, it would be brought down to the workshop for repair. But I can't remember really having to work actually on the ship's equipment at all. You have to bear in mind that the Tyne was, as a destroyer depot ship, was responsible for flotillas of destroyers. We had, I suppose, 3 or 4 destroyer flotillas attached to the Tyne, so any equipment on those ships which was defective came on board for repair. And that was what it was about, really. We had at that time I was not a petty officer, but we had a petty officer in charge. I can see his face, but I can't remember his name. And I think we got on pretty well.
So what sort of thing would go wrong with the wireless equipment of the destroyers?
Well, I suppose radio receivers would develop the faults that receivers did in those days.
What type of thing was endemic?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, radio, radar, television equipment these days is much more reliable because it doesn't work on... Well, whilst there are high voltages involved, my period is sort of pre-transistor days. Transistors came in towards the end of the war, and sets were operated by thermionic valves, which tended to go wrong more frequently than transistors do today. Today, if one goes wrong, you throw the whole lot out and put a new bit in. But sets were also powered by power units, which were rectifiers and transformers, all conducting a fair bit of current. And of course, where there is current, there is heat, and that tended to create the sort of faults that occurred. Condensers would break down and this sort of thing, and a set wouldn't work for whatever reason. They were the sort of faults that I suppose went from time to time that we had to diagnose.
Now, would you, with a valve, would you repair a valve or would you just put a new valve
Couldn't
in?
Repair a valve. No, if a valve went wrong, that was it. But and then the same with the components of radio, of WT sets and radar sets. And I must say, I was primarily concerned having passed out, I was primarily concerned with wireless and not radar. All components were subject to breaking down, condensers, resistors, capacitors and so on, and if they went wrong they had to be replaced.
So it was repair by replacement rather than...
Yes, very much, yeah.
Was diagnosis a problem? Did you have...
It could be a problem. I don't know, I can't recall too many things that were difficult, but it could be a problem, and of course it could be due to installation, which would be not necessarily the set itself, but how it had been installed.
What do you mean?
Well, power supplies on ships are all centrally generated, and power cables, if you go on board warships, you'll see them all running on channel plating. And it could be that fault had developed in the electrics, which would, I suppose, have been more the concern of the ship's electricians, because there was an electrical branch as well, which did dealt with the pure electrics as opposed to the radio and radar.
Now, when you came aboard the ship, how did you get on with the other lads on the mess deck? Can you just talk about that a little bit? The other petty officers, leading seamen. And
yes, I got to know them slowly, I suppose, because I was on Tyne for, about 18 months? Perhaps not quite as long as that. And I was with virtually the same companions all the time. There were fellow radio mechanics in the mess, who I can remember. I got on well with them. I don't know that I had close friends amongst the radio mechs, although I did go to one chap's wedding after the war. But the artisans' mess comprised tradesmen of a wide variety. There were, you might think odd on to have on board a ship, but there were blacksmiths. And I can remember one chap who was a man called Owen Charrett, who was a blacksmith, and he used to say, yes, he said, we've got pit ponies down there and all these sort of things. You know, that was his sort of style of humour. But they did heavy metal work. What were the other trades? I can't remember.
Carpenter?
Carpenters, yes, there were chippies in this, very, very much so, yes. And there were electricians in the, of course I've mentioned them before, but there were electricians in the mess. So there were a good variety, and people got on well. I don't remember anybody falling out, any disputes really of any kind, really.
What were your officers like? We haven't really talked about officers yet.
No, we haven't, no.
Who were your officers?
There were not... On a ship of this size, and what would the complement have been? Several hundred, I suppose, 600 or 700. And as I say, when we left the UK, we had Marines on board, but they didn't stay. I remember certain officers. One officer in particular, because he was the son or the grandson of a well-known cricketer, namely W.G. Grace. This was Lieutenant Commander Grace. I knew him by sight and by repute, and I knew the captain by name, whose name was Boucher, Captain Boucher. But I don't remember. The only officer who we were directly involved with as radio mechanics, as I say, there was a PO, a petty officer, and I think there was another, maybe a chief petty officer, I can't now remember. But there was a warrant officer, which is a particular breed of officer in the Royal Navy, a man who's come up through the ranks, who I think was in charge of that department. But in all honesty, we had very little to do with the ship's officers. Didn't really come in. It may sound strange, but there wasn't a lot of contact. I certainly can't remember much about the ship's officers.
Now, what about the food and the sort of mess? Tell us about the food on the mess deck.
The food, the style of messing, I think, was what was known as general messing.
Now, what does that mean?
Where food is prepared centrally in the galley, and someone is appointed each day from the mess to be the cook of. They didn't do any cooking, but their job was to go and collect the food from the galley at the appropriate times. And meals would be dinner time and tea time, I suppose it was. There was an old saying. When I mentioned to you earlier on that I went in through the Y scheme, the people that went in through the Y scheme were known as CW candidates, because it was commission warrant. And there was an old saying, one of the many sayings in the Navy, that it was CW candidates to lunch, hands to dinner. Well, but anyway, that was how the food was collected.
What was the food like?
Not very good, not really very good at all. Not like I can't remember a great deal about it, but it varied at times depending whether we were in port or whether we were at sea and where the supplies had been acquired. Did vary, but it wasn't particularly good food. I can't honestly remember meals individually whether some food was upsetting or not, but it certainly wasn't food that you look forward to.